Q.
I got something here. I want to see if you know what this is.
A Q.
A Q. That's right.
Yeah, I like that.
Hello and welcome from deep inside Jolly Roger's studio. This is the Q Filmcast. And whether you're out listening online worldwide or perhaps nationwide, one of our affiliate stations, thank you as always for tuning in. If you don't yet know, maybe you've stumbled upon us by chance. We are the show, which brings to you our review of a particular film currently available on Netflix Instant. We take turns queuing it up. We go around the table here at Jolly Roger's studio. We tell you what we thought. And this week, we're queuing up the 1971 Grandma Gone Wild cult classic, Harold and Maude.
That's a little different than that.
Oh, we're going to get into how different that is, yeah. But it sounded good. How often do you say Grandma's Gone Wild?
Not often enough.
Too often.
Too often, yeah. Yeah, so that's the film today, guys, Harold and Maude, 1971. So if you've seen it, keep listening. Maybe see if you agree or disagree with us. And who knows, it might be something you want to queue up yourself, yeah. Right? And that's the way this game is played. So if you're wondering how we rated this film, I guess you can say it just depends.
Yeah.
Incontinence jokes.
Sorry.
Yeah. How long have you been saving that one?
So classy.
Days and days and days. Sorry. So, yeah, once again, welcome to the queue. I am Michael, along with James Hardsub Savage.
What's up, Maestro?
What's up? Ask me how I'm doing.
How you doing, Maestro?
I'm doing okay. You know, my car was not carjacked by an old lady
there
on the way
go.
Over here.
Right.
Always
right.
Looking up.
My wife didn't magically turn into my grandmother. So. No, everything's good.
Suicides didn't work.
Right. Yeah.
We're not successful.
Yeah, and believe me, after this day, I tried many times on the way over here. Look at that. That's look over here. It's Matt St. Hoodie, the patron saint of quality outerwear.
Hi.
Hey, man.
Hi.
We have Max Gumbo Johnson. This is probably going to be official, unless we have some kind of a miraculous
you
comeback.
You said that last week.
Actually, Pass the Guacamole is making a comeback. Have you seen this?
I refuse to be called Pass the Guacamole.
We had
it's not
two more votes on Pass the Guacamole
probably
today.
Probably you.
Yeah.
Probably you.
No, it wasn't me. It wasn't me.
How long is this thing going to happen? It's been for like a month.
We said March 1st, but we had a lot of visitors to the site today, and I think we had several, for some reason, snap up and say, hey, it's going to be Pass the Guacamole, whatever. Max Gumbo Johnson.
Gumby Bears.
That'll never be that. And then we have our producer.
It can't be anything else.
It can't be that.
wait, hang on. Just say it.
What's going on, Gumby Bears?
Gumby Bears.
He can't keep a straight face if you call him Gumby Bears. He can't do it.
Nor should he. This one's easy to say. This is Adam the Bomb Rogers. That's the greatest producer in the history of the Q Filmcast. Right
I heard
there.
The bum on that one.
The Bomb Rogers. All right, guys. Something like that. Ways to keep up with us. You have everything. Pretty much at this point, on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes. You find us on Google Plus. We have a YouTube channel now. Just Google or search the Q Filmcast. It's there. We also have our free Android app. Yeah, it's free. It's an Android app. Go to your Google Plus store.
All right,
that's what that is. That's there for you. And we have our website.
Yep.
QFilmcast.whatsavage.net. And go there. And I think by the time you guys listen to this, the contest will be over. Max will be officially something other than just to the Max Johnson. So
he'll be Gumbo.
He'll be Gumbo. Oh, man. He might end up being Gummy Bears. I have no idea. All right, let's get into it. That's that, and this is this. This is Harold and Maude, currently streaming on Netflix, and that's what we're going to talk about right now. And this is a Adam the Bomb Rogers pick.
Surprisingly.
Why is it surprising?
Because we know you.
It's got a hearse in it.
You know, maybe it's not.
I wasn't surprised at all that he picked that.
Yeah. I wasn't too overly surprised. Yeah,
it's about the death business.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's that angle, but the blood really was fake. So, yeah, it's a little surprising.
Some of it?
Yeah, okay. Adam, talk to us about why you want to queue this film up. It's kind of odd because it's all from 1971, which you know, not necessarily in your wheelhouse, I don't think. But go ahead.
I like a lot of 70s flicks. No, I saw this movie back during college and... Because someone's like, oh, you're in a, you know, you're going to work at a funeral home. You have to see this movie. This guy drives his hearse and everything. So, hey.
That is why he told you to watch this film.
And we rented it and went over there, and I fell in love instantly with this movie, and I have yet to stop talking about it since then.
All right.
Fantastic. And what year was this, you think? Never mind.
20 years ago.
Okay. 20 years ago.
Today?
To the day. Yeah.
Kind of close. It was cold.
Well, that's chilly. Cool. So this is like one of your... your kind of your favorite films. It's kind of in your archives. It's a film you've always loved. And there it is on Netflix.
And it was stolen from me.
Did you watch it with your dad?
All right, let's get into this a little bit. Anybody else see this film before tonight?
Yes. Yeah, I did.
Yes.
You have? Okay.
Before tonight, yeah.
Well, before. Whenever you watched it. All right, yeah. This is kind of a cult film, too. A lot of people seem to really warm up to this film. But written by Colin Higgins. You know, he wrote 9 to 5 and Foul Play.
He did a much better job on 9 to 5 and Foul Play.
Okay. Directed by Hal Ashby.
Awesome. He's awesome.
Shampoo Coming Home being there. This stars Ruth Gordon and Bud Cort.
Right.
We know who Ruth Gordon is. You know, she won Academy Award, Rosemary's Baby, Adam's Rib, I didn't know this at first. Any Which Way But Loose. She was Clint Eastwood's mother.
Yeah. Come back here with my Oreos, you hairy
ass.
You
stole my damn Oreos.
Yeah, it was a great line. And as a kid, I remember loving that woman in this movie, you know?
Yeah.
So I didn't realize that was her. And then, Bud Cort, he was, obviously Harold, and he was, yeah, he's Harold and Harold Maude, guys, but he was also appeared in MASH, The Life Aquatic. Didn't know that.
I didn't know that.
He was God in Dogma.
He was God in Dogma. Yeah, he was, and he was in Heat.
Yeah, I don't remember him in Heat.
You don't remember him in Heat?
Who was he coming on in Dogma if he was in Heat?
Oh, jeez. That's so good. That's so good. I appreciate that. Heat, he played the creepy,
He played somebody creepy.
No, he played the creepy chef. Remember in the diner? The one that was a real jerk?
I hadn't seen Heat in so long.
Whatever, man. He was in that. This inspired our inescapable, iconic roles. Every show, we end it with a top three that's kind of inspired by the movie. And this here is inescapable, iconic roles, basically because Bud Cort is forever tied to Harold from Harold and Maude. There's a lot of actors like that. Also starred Vivian Pickles. No reason I just like the name Vivian Pickles.
That's a fantastic name.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. And Tom Skerritt.
Right. We'll get into Tom Skerritt in a minute.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe that wasn't Tom Skerritt. I didn't see his name in the credits.
Oh, there you go.
Good point.
Yep. Ratings. Let's get into this here. Harold and Maude, 1971. On IMDb, you have an 8.1. And on Rotten Tomatoes, you're going to go to the critics at 86% fresh and users at 93% fresh. Yeah, this is a very revered film.
It is. In a lot of circles, it is.
And you know what's great? Because this film, this show, I like doing the show with you guys, is because sometimes there's these movies you dance around forever. You just never really see them.
Yeah.
And for years, it's like you have to see Harold and Maude, have to see Harold and Maude. So, you know, this is like the best part of this project for me. I could see these films that I probably should have, but haven't. All right, so let's get into what this film is about. You ready, Max?
Yeah.
Talk about this one. Harold and Maude, 1971. Here's what you have. Wealthy and self-destructive teenager Harold is obsessed with death. He spends his leisure time attending funerals, watching the demolition of buildings, visiting junkyards, and simulating suicide, just to get the attention of his indifferent, snobbish, and egocentric mother. His only real avenue of any sort of enlightenment is the occasional session with his lame psychiatrist. But when Harold meets the anarchistic 79-year-old Maude at a funeral, they become friends. And the old lady discloses other perceptives of the cycle of life for him. Meanwhile, his mother enlists him in a dating service and tries to force him to join the army. On the day of Maude's 80th birthday, Harold proposes to her and discovers the truth about love and the small, beautiful moments which define it, all while watching the fleeting window of life close before him.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
You like that?
Beautiful. Yeah.
Someone get him a hanky.
You didn't write that.
Well, it just depends.
Oh, I think that's going to be an ongoing thing.
More poopy humor.
That was a number two for the depends.
We'll just go ahead and retire
that. Way to ruin that.
We'll just go ahead and retire
that. No, you won't.
So why don't we stop here? Why don't we listen to a trailer from Harold and Maude, and then we'll come back. We'll tell you what we thought. Here you go.
Harold, I asked, do you have any friends?
Maybe one.
What is your name?
Harold.
Oh, how do you do? I'm Dame Marjorie Chardin, but you may call me Maud.
For I haven't lived. I've died a few times.
Were they all done for your mother's benefit?
I would not say benefit.
Oh, my God!
I think it is time for you to get married.
I have a luncheon today. I don't even know where my mother arranged it.
What do you do for fun? What do you find fulfilling?
I go to funerals.
I have instructed to induct you into the service, to take up active duty with the United States Army.
You travel the world, take on a man's job. You walk tall.
Any time that I'm on.
Making your rhymes, bringing your steps. Just like Nathan Hale.
Okay, so there it is. There's a trailer from the 1971 film Harold and Maude, and we're going to leave it right there.
Maude.
No reason to get into much more than that. It does star Ruth Gordon as Maude, which leaves Bud Cort as Harold.
Yep.
And then there's Maude.
And then you want your ending song? There you go. The Maud theme.
Right.
Okay. All right, let's get into a little bit of Did You Know. Some things about this film. Did you know that Ruth Gordon driving the hearse is actually being towed because she never learned how to drive a car?
What?
Mind blown. What do you think of that there, Max?
I didn't know that.
That is.
But now I do.
That is mind blown.
I thought that was actually her driving the... She learned to drive a motorcycle, apparently, because there was no cut between when she got on a motorcycle. I didn't see one. Was there? Probably one.
Not a car. Wow. It didn't say anything about a motorcycle.
Max just totally talked himself out of that one.
Did they have CGI? CGI back in 1970?
No.
I'm going to believe that they did.
I think the bike was attached to a boat.
How about a track?
I don't know. Like a training
wheels.
There you go.
And did you know that when considering the role of Harold, Bud Cort asked the opinion of director Robert Altman, his mentor? Altman cautioned that rising star Cort might find himself forever typecast. And for
really?
This, yeah. You didn't know that, did you?
No, I didn't know that.
But now you know, but you didn't know this either. That he also turned down the role of Billy Bibbit in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. He was actually cast as that, turned it down last minute because he didn't want to be typecast.
He should have took Billy Bibbit.
No,
worked out well.
No, that guy worked out great for Billy. So.
They both ended up being typecast, kind of in the same vein, but with different movies.
Yeah.
Did you know that this is ranked number 9 in the American Film Institute's list of 10 greatest films in the genre romantic comedy? I'm going to part ways on whether that's the genre it should be in, but there you go.
Yeah,
that's
I can see that, though.
So, every show, what's that, Max?
Interesting stuff.
Is it interesting stuff?
I didn't know any of that.
The look on your face was like one of complete enlightenment. That's why I stopped and said,
I feel like a Buddhist.
You do feel like a Buddhist, yeah.
Yeah. Nirvana tonight.
Are you sitting cross-legged underneath the table?
That's for you to know.
I'm not checking. Yeah. The way we rate these things is we don't use stars, thumbs up. Well, you know why we don't do that, Hoodie?
Because it's stupid.
Because it's stupid. We let the film tell us what we want to do. It's nice when you can rely on things every week.
Right.
So this week, the producer, the Bomb Rogers, is going to rate with, he's going to give us the rating, actually. He's going to give us our currency, as we say. What is it?
1 through 10 elaborate suicides.
All right, cool. All right, let's do that. 1 through 10 elaborate suicides.
Sounds elaborate.
Could you elaborate?
Suicidal.
All right, guys, so let's go around. Let's start with the man who queued it up. That's usually what we do, right? 1 through 10 elaborate suicides. What are you going to give it?
Perfect 10.
Perfect 10.
Wow.
Hey, a lot
movie.
Of people
That's
would.
That's one in a row, Brad.
A lot of people
Adam's
would agree.
First 10, right?
Yeah, it is.
My only 10.
Is that
your
only 10?
First
10?
Yeah, and my first 9 was last week.
Okay. All right, man. Really, I would say it's a high score. You can't go any higher than that.
No.
Let's go to the right. Let's go to Max.
I like the memory of this movie much more than I did actually watching it. I thought I enjoyed it a lot more.
Yeah.
I was like, Harold Maud was great. And then I watched it again. I was like, wow. I didn't enjoy it that much.
Right.
I'm going to have to go 6 elaborate suicides.
6 elaborate suicides. Okay.
Yep. Same page as Max. This is the first time having viewed, so I don't even have the memory, which is why I'm going with a 5.
Going with a 5. Yep. All right. Hoodie goes with a 5 elaborate suicides. And that brings us to James Hart, Sub-Savage.
I don't know what movie y'all's watching. It's a 10. This is a perfect, perfect film.
Yeah, a lot of people would agree. It certainly has its legs as far as being talked about.
Yeah.
People still talk about this film. Who's that, Leave Me?
Yep.
Okay. Like I said, I've been dancing around this one for a long time. So for you to cue this up was like, all right, man, enough. I'm going to put this thing to bed. I'm going to watch this film. This is somewhere between a 9 and a 10.
Yeah. It's a 10.
This is,
how does this happen?
This is one of the best viewing experiences I've had in a long time. It is brilliant, brilliant. But we'll talk about that here in a minute.
So what is it? What do you give it? You can't just.
Okay. I'm sorry. It's between a 9 and a 10. Put me at 9.
Jeez.
I'm going to start there.
Room.
I like to go up. I don't like to go down. So let's just stay 9.
Room.
Little bit of wiggle room. I like how we can kind of change between a 9 and a 10.
40.
Yeah. Jeez. Close to it.
It's not close to it. It is 40.
It may be a 41.
Might be a 41.
Or it might go down.
I may raise mine.
I may lower mine to a 0.
Okay. All right. So let's get into a defend conclusion. Is what we say. We're going to talk about why we landed on these scores. And I want to go back to Adam. Adam the Bomb Rogers, the producer. Talk about it. Tell us why you gave it a 10. Talk about anything there.
I think this movie is beautifully insane, hysterically funny to me. I love the acting. I love everything about it. The hearses are in there. I love those.
That's valid. That's valid.
And it's an awesome hearse, too.
Yeah, it is. It is.
I just think this is probably one of the best movies ever made. I absolutely love this movie.
Do you think it falls into the category of romantic comedy? You think it's more of a comedy, or you like the romance of it better?
No, it's not your typical romantic comedy.
No,
but
not at all.
It's still it's a strange romance, but you know it's there, so technically it's a romantic comedy.
Mm-hmm. But 10's high for you, man.
Yeah,
it's
off the charts.
Yeah. I mean, you got to explain your 10.
The guy faking the suicides, I laugh so much each time he does it.
So you're looking at it like you're bringing out to the front all the sight gags. You thought the comedy held up is like the big thing for you.
The mother, just her, especially when she's like filling out the survey for herself for the computer dating.
Right.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Ruth Gordon doing all of her stuff and just being her crazy wild self.
Yeah, she was a revelation. Yeah, no doubt.
And Bud Cort just putting a fantastic spin on his character. I just love it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Let's go from high to low. There's Max.
Well, he's low.
Well, you want to go over to Hoodie first?
If you want. Don't matter to me.
Let's get there.
Let's go. Let's go to Hoodie. Hoodie, go ahead and tell us what your thoughts are and why you gave Harold Maude 5.
Yeah. I gave it why 5. Why you gave it 5. Yeah.
What's going on? As a first time viewer,
time having seen this movie, I thought that it was kind of contrived. They said, we need a crazy grandma. So they made her crazy. We needed a suicidal dark kid. And he was, you know, very cliche. Everything kind of just fit nicely into the cliche. The only thing that it really had going for it were the little, and I hate to use the word again, but the juxtapositions, like the flowers, and then the next scene is the tombstones. Mm-hmm. But that was all over the movie. It wasn't just that, which I thought could have been nicely done if it wasn't so heavy-handed, which basically sums up the whole movie. It was just really overly done and overly heavy-handed on it as a whole. And it just kept upsetting me.
It upset you. Love is tough, man. I know. It's hard. So you felt like it was a little bit too much thrown at you in big bucket loads.
It's the whole, you know, show don't tell thing. And mm-hmm. it just kept getting thrown into my face. Like, yes, I get it. Death. I mean, you knew the story from the opening scene. I did at least.
Yeah.
80. I know how this is going to end. He's suicidal. I know how this is going to end. So give me a little twist or at least make it heartwarming.
Wow.
Do something.
I thought there were twists from the opening frame to the end, but
twists.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, there were twists in this thing. You want to go over to where do we go next? James?
How can we leave it at that?
Where?
Well, I'm sorry.
We'll get into that.
I'll forget.
Sorry. I will forget. I won't forget my twists.
Let's go over to James Hearts Up Savage, man. You gave this a perfect score 10. What's up?
This is one of the best love story movies you'll ever see. There's genuine tenderness. There's genuine care. And both of these actors, Ruth Gordon and Bud Cort, so embody these two characters perfectly. Bud Cort is clearly a damaged person who's looking for something. And Ruth Gordon, and you know, he's the fascination with death. And I understand Hoodie's comment about the cliche. It does, you know, when it opens with a, you know, staged suicide.
Yeah.
You kind of know where you're going. And then with Ruth Gordon's character, Maude, being so in love with life, it's the classic story of the star-crossed lovers, but it's told so well and it's acted so brilliantly. You just couldn't ask for anything more. I mean, I was almost in tears watching this thing. And I love this movie. So it's just a brilliant film.
Yeah. Okay. I might back you up on some of that. Max Johnson, go ahead.
I find it ironic you said you were almost in tears watching this movie because I was almost in tears as well.
I'm sure for a different reason, sir.
Here's my problem with the movie. One of my big problems. We had talked about this on a couple other movies. It seemed like two different movies. The first half.
Really?
Yeah. To me, I was like, the first half, I would have been driving myself nuts hanging around Ruth Gordon, around Maude.
Oh, me too.
She was so annoying.
Completely
She was
annoying.
Just completely annoying.
Every character in this movie was the most annoying person
stand
I've ever
her.
Met.
It's like, first off, she's annoyingly chipper and smiling all the time. That gets on my nerves.
And it was creepy because of her teeth.
Yeah, and it's creepy. It creeps you out. It's like, what's up with this chick? What's her problem?
Maybe they'd have Polydent back in 1970.
And she's a thief. Yeah, oh, what a cute lady. She steals stuff. That's awesome. That's not endearing to me.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't find this character endearing at all. But at the second half, like, okay, I can kind of come around. Yeah. She's a little bit nicer now, and she kind of calms down a bit. But Harold, I'd have been like, man, I wish he'd screw up and actually kill himself sometime. He got completely nerve-wracking the whole first half of the movie. And then you find out kind of why he's like this. Okay, it changes a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But that first 45 minutes or so just, oh, and it wasn't funny.
It wasn't funny, and it could have been really.
There were some parts. I tell you,
they could have summed it up.
Okay, there's some pretty funny instances, though.
Maybe 1971.
Yeah, okay.
But it's kind of tired right now.
I'll agree with Adam. The funniest part was when the mom was filling out the survey. That was the funniest part of the whole movie, and Uncle Victor.
You don't think the one-arm salute was pretty funny?
Yeah, as you said, okay. Uncle Victor. Okay. Was that a name?
Uncle Victor. Yeah,
Uncle Victor.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Is that all for right now? Because we're going to revisit some of this. You want me to get into mine?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to try to be real surgical with this rundown because I could talk about this one for a while.
Yeah.
Not going to, though. All right, to start, I'm having a real difficult time calling this a romantic comedy.
It's not a comedy.
It's not a romantic comedy either. This was not about romance, two people coming together, trying to build a life together. Mm-hmm. This was about something much more than that, to me anyways. It might be like the glossy finish on it, but there's a lot more there. And that's why this film kind of blows my mind. This is a deep, rich, incredibly layered movie, and it's brilliant. When I first went to watch this thing, I thought, okay, all right, I'm going to see. I might like this film. I didn't realize I'd fall in love with this movie. But I did. And when you first hear the film mentioned, it's always kind of categorized as this wacky sort of, you know, like you think that's what you're going to get, this kind of, hey, watch what happens when a 17-year-old falls madly in love with a 79. It's wacky, crazy. It's Harold Maude, you know, that whole thing. That's not what's at its center here, though.
No.
You know what I'm saying? Not at all. But what's at its center, to me, is a profound film about people who have been shown way too much about life and death. That's what both these characters have had thrown at them.
Yeah.
So much so that it's almost kind of destroyed them in a way. It's been leading them their whole lives, whether it's at the forefront or at the end of their lives, one much earlier, one currently, you know what I mean? But they're looking at the world in a way that their peers just are not. They're very two unique people, because of their experiences. And, that's why you can take this crazy premise, the young kid falling in love with the old woman, and in the end, it becomes both compelling and very believable to me. That's what impressed me about this film. I didn't doubt this once I understood who these people were. It's because I think that they may be at different points of the road, but they're both on the same road. There are different sections of the road, but they're on the same highway.
Sure.
They really do have a connection. And the film does such a great job of showing us that. And they do it with such patience, humor, intellect. I mean, from the very beginning. And from that beginning, too. I've talked about that opening scene.
That was my favorite scene in the whole movie.
Yeah, when you see, that's one of my favorite scenes of any movie. I mean, when it comes in and all you see are feet, very unsure, ambiguous feet. Matter of fact, I wasn't so convinced that was even a dude. It was just ambiguous.
I thought it was actually like a
70s style.
Well, no, they set it up to, in my opinion, not to interrupt you, but they set it up like this is old floor, like old English floors, really old shoes, old. So
old
I was
money.
Like
the staircase.
You know, so I was like, oh, this must be the doctor leaving Maude's room, telling me that she's terminal, and then it walks down, goes through the whole thing. Puts on Cat Stevens. I was like, that's a twist. I like that. Yeah. That's kind of nice. And then you see it's the kid. So that tells me the kid's kind of like an old soul.
And that's exactly right. And he obviously comes from some kind of a higher echelon, maybe Ivy League type of situation, you know. Right.
That's exactly, yeah.
So you know that backstory, just that instant, you think, okay, this is probably a house with a lot of money, a lot of everything but warmth.
Yeah.
It's kind of what you're set up for. And then that equally stirring Cat Stevens song.
Yeah.
Right? Slightly overplayed Cat Stevens song.
That's all they played.
That was one of the best parts of the movie.
But I was completely captured. That opening scene is literally one of the best scenes I've ever seen because you talk about twists. You see that and you think, oh, okay, this is going to be a cold movie. And then the Cat Stevens song comes on.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, wait, now we have some lightness. Then he climbs up on the stool. Now it's dark.
Yeah.
And now we go into straight tragedy, and you know that woman's going to open the door, and she's going to see tragedy. That doesn't happen.
Nope.
Oh, it's
it's a continually ambiguous experience, and you don't know what it means. And then
it's
a
neat one shot too. It's a neat tracking shot.
That's right. Yeah, it's a one shot. Yeah. It is stunning to me, and it sets the tone. And without talking about too much of the scenes, because you know I'll stop right there. There's a bunch of these, but bottom line is I believe this completely. And there's so many subtle winks and nods in this thing, like what you talked about, the tombstones becoming flowers. The continual warm words from Maude that felt like they were exactly what Harold needed.
Yeah.
She wasn't just saying them. She knew what she was doing.
Mm-hmm.
Not just to make him feel better, but to heal him. Okay? And through this whole film, I'm like, what's her story? There's one scene in this film, and that is when the sleeve rolls up, and you see her concentration camp marker. And you
mentioned.
Know, it's never mentioned. That is absolutely brilliant. And you knew right there she had every reason to know what Harold needed because her fear of death was completely familiar to his. And it tied the whole thing together. The directing was flawless. The humor was spot on, perfectly in sync. The fake deaths, the bad dates, the carjackings. I'm going to say the best one-arm salute ever. Loved, loved, loved this film from start to finish. Loved it. Might actually be one of my all-time favorite films. Actually, by the time I really, really marinate myself in this one.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Adam's the only one that's ever said Harold and Maude to anybody.
Yes, exactly right. Okay, so that's it, man. And I'll tell you what, why don't we stop right here? You want to hear whether or not Harold and Maude, or especially Maude, is annoying? Let's talk
about
that. We're
going to do a listener poll on that one.
Yeah, we may have to.
Yeah.
Here's a piece from Harold and Maude. Check it out.
Your license, lady?
I don't have one. I don't believe in them.
How long have you been driving, lady?
About 45 minutes, wouldn't you say, Harold? We were hoping to start sooner, but you see, it's rather hard to find a truck.
It's your truck?
No, I just took it. Yes, I have to pump my truck. Well, it's not mine, really, but we would like to get it into soil as soon as possible.
Yeah, let me get this straight, lady.
All right, then, and we'll be off. Nice and chatty.
Oh, Lord, it's Maud.
Oh, really?
I say Lord. You heard some Maud. No, that is the 1971 cult classic film, Harold and Maude. So there you go. There's a taste of that. This was queued up by our producer, Adam the Bomb Rogers. I want to go to you first because we're going to talk about some scenes. We're going to talk about this film. We're going to talk about just really what we remember. So you first. I'm throwing to you, man. Talk about a scene out of this film and let's kind of get the thing going here.
Probably favorite scene of this. I laughed so hysterically I had to stop first time I saw this. Was the scene where he goes and he's behind the pool and he's on a date and he lights himself on fire.
Yeah, the immolation.
And then he shows back up. Oh, my God. That was hysterically funny.
And then he mugs for the camera, kind of
breaks the fourth wall a little bit.
Stanley Roper style. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. It was a little Roper-esque.
Stanley Roper. I mean, all the suicides he did were just funny as anything. They were just so out of place.
There were four of them. I think I counted these. You had the hanging. You had the bleeding, the cutting of the wrist, I guess.
Yeah.
You had the setting on fire, and you had the drowning, right?
And you had the gunshot.
And the gun. There's five. Oops.
And you had Harry Carey.
Harry Carey.
Which is so funny.
And then he drove off the cliff.
Right. Wait a second. What else did he?
You miscounted, sir.
Seven. Sorry. I missed three of them. All right. So, yeah, you keep going into the comedy aspect of this thing. To me, that was just – that was the little cherry on this beautiful thing. Yeah. But, okay. Good conversation there. What was your favorite death? No, it was. No,
you
no,
asked.
No, it was a great – it was a great response because that is like the backbone of this thing. There's a lot of great comedy in this. But what's your favorite death, Max?
Disagree. But my favorite death?
Yeah. Your favorite death?
I don't know. I thought they were all kind of dumb.
Even the first one?
Yeah, the first one was kind of dumb because they were all fake. And it's just like, well, how's he pulling this off? And the immolation scene?
Yeah. Well, doesn't make any sense.
Doesn't make any sense. There was no cut from the guy setting himself on fire and he just walks
there
up.
There was a cut.
There was.
Okay.
Look at it again. Okay. Watch it again.
There was a cut. Okay. Who set themselves on fire out there?
It doesn't matter. Right. That's insane.
So is he suicidal or a magician?
Yeah. Which is it? Is he a wizard?
He's not suicidal. He just wants the attention. Suicidal. Okay.
I never understood how he drowned himself, too. I didn't quite get that one. The first one was creepy because his eyes were literally bugged out, drool coming down. Yeah. I mean, some of these things were like, good Lord, man, that's some eerie looking.
Yeah.
That's eerie. Yeah.
He's acting.
What about you, Matt? Did you have a particular? Let's get these out of the way.
I like the Harry Carey death the best, but only because of her reaction. I thought that was great. And that might be his perfect girl. He kind of missed the boat on that one.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Maude
gone back to her.
Maude told him to get out there and love some more, so maybe he's going back.
I suspect that's the case.
I still like the first one, though, just because it was so jarring, and it looked vicious. I mean, he played it out vicious. I'm going straight to I did ask you, didn't I?
No.
Oops. Sorry. Kill me. What is it?
I like the first one too, but not for that reason. I mean, for one, it's a brilliant opening track shot.
Yeah.
But for the dinner after, and he's not eating, and she's like, "Why aren't you eating, Harold?" And he's like, "I've got a sore throat."
And he scarfs the beets,
and he loves beets
like a 5-year-old. Yeah. What was like, the whole time I'm watching this movie? I'm like, "Is this kid 14?"
I don't know.
And it turns out he's 5. I don't know how old this kid is. It ranges like 5 to 20-something.
Yeah. The only thing I like about that opening suicide was that deep focus section where it was the back of his head and you could see his mom sitting there on the phone.
Yeah.
Whoa. I really like that. I thought, wow, that's really well done.
It's a neat camera work. There was some neat camera work.
It's called deep focus.
Yeah. It kind of resembled the same thing. They did this a lot through the movie where they were talking about a funeral. So it goes to the top of a church and then pans down and.
Yeah.
Or they were talking about a wedding. I'm sorry. And it pans down. You see the funeral, which is another opposite kind of thing. Yeah. So it was misleading. And I enjoyed that if it wasn't so heavy handed.
Well, you know, the thing I really liked about this was the way things looked as far as the people. I thought his face was so animated and so tragic and so crazy and so on the edge.
Yeah.
I thought the casting in this was great. I don't know where they found this kid.
Yeah.
But he was so perfectly cast. You just looked at his face, and there was something so unique about his presence.
I found it to be a tender vulnerability. I mean, there was very tender.
He had doe eyes. It just looked at you almost like you could see right through inside of what his spirit was.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to bet Matt agrees with me. I didn't find his face animated at all. He had the same look through the entire movie.
He had black eyes. Completely doll's eyes.
Okay. Wait. Hold on. When the cop pulls him over and she says, get the shovel. He literally just walks over there, gets the shovel, and walks back.
Hits himself
in
the head.
Same look in the eyes.
Yeah,
the cop's pulling running him over. He gets out and he just, then he's sitting there talking to her. The only time he showed any emotion was when he started crying.
And that was still.
And then he still kind of looked the same.
I don't know. I thought his presence on screen was magnanimous.
I did too.
It was magnanimous. And to me, that's the best part of the screen. The entire film to me came together when they were together, Harold and Maude.
Yeah.
Those scenes were so crafted, and everything about what they said, what they felt, the way they looked at each other, the way they danced with each other, just brought these two spirits together, because the film is about two spirits finding each other.
Yeah.
And that's what came through to me. And the casting was great.
It was just so contrived, the whole thing.
What do you mean by contrived? Give me some examples.
It's been done 100 times. All right, so.
Really? Whoa.
Okay, yeah, it has. I mean, to me, I feel like it's been done over and over and over.
You're talking about themes. You're talking about star-crossed lovers.
I'm not talking about the theme.
That.
I'm talking about, like, specifically, like, dialogue. Like, she's all yin and yang. You put these guys together, they're basically yin and yang. He's the dark death. She's the light life. And that's the only thing that they have going. That's it. So he's the dark side. She is the light side. There's no darkness in her. There's no light in him until the end. But it's still, I needed a more complex, complete character from both sides.
Okay. Really? And you can, I love the complex.
And you can show me the number on the arm, and I'm like, oh, okay. But that
there you go. That's what I'm trying to say.
I figured
here.
It as much.
Well, okay. If you went through the hell she went through in her early life.
Okay. So where did they show that in the movie? Did she even?
That's the brilliance of the film.
I don't think
why is she lively? Yeah. It's because she went through this hell and she's like, I get to be free and live.
And then she kills herself.
There's so much going on with these characters.
No. Let's stay out here. She goes. She's in a concentration camp. She realizes the value of life. She lives life to the fullest, and then she, at the end, goes against everything we know about her character and offs herself. How does that make sense?
She said at the beginning she thinks that 80 is a good age to die.
Yeah.
That still goes to me. That goes against how we know Maude.
She doesn't want to be this crippled old lady in a
nursing
home.
She's obviously not a crippled old lady.
Yeah.
No, but she doesn't want to be that person.
So when she becomes,
she's like, I lived my life. I'm good. I'm done. Let's.
Yeah.
Let's go out on a high note.
We'll see what Max has to say about that.
What do I think about what in particular?
Tell you what, just talk about the film. You're at the low end of this thing, so you tell me what you got on this.
I might be down there with him by the time we're done. Best scene in the movie, in my opinion, well, there's two of them. When he goes to meet with Uncle Victor and he gives that big speech. Uncle Victor gives a big speech about, you know, Nathan Hale.
Nathan Hale, this country needs more Nathan Hale.
With Nixon in the background.
Right. And then the Pope
was the president
in the background.
At the time.
Yeah, no, I know.
Well, I mean, who did you want him to have up there? Eisenhower?
Patton?
I like that scene. And the scene where they were sitting there smoking the water pipe, which there was no smoke coming out for some odd reason. But that, I thought that was the most well-written scene in the whole movie, where they were actually just sitting there talking. And she seemed like a real person, and he seemed like a real person.
Right.
Not these cardboard cutouts. So this guy likes death, and he's fascinated with death, and she loves life. She's fascinated with life. You actually saw a little bit of humanity come out in both of these people.
Man, I didn't.
Which I didn't see through the whole movie.
Are you serious? You didn't catch any of that? You didn't catch any of the underlying
catch? What was there to catch?
What's the catch?
Let me tell you what's the catch. When you hear Harold give his explanation as to why he's feeling these things, and you find out in the very beginning something happened to his dad. His entire perception of life and death is thrown into a tizzy because of something that happened to him.
Her
entire life and death perception is thrown into a tizzy because of what she experienced in that great reveal later. But
we don't find that out till later.
No.
Hold on. You're discounting what I'm saying. I'm saying that was the most well-written scene in the movie because they were both humans in that scene. In the scene you're talking about where you find out something happened to his dad, he's sitting there talking to his shrink.
No, he's talking to Maude.
He's talking to, he's talking to Maude. But even then, I didn't see where he was too upset about it.
Sat there and broke down and cried. His eyes were so red, they looked like the color of Hoodie's microphone. You know
red.
What she says? She says to him exactly what he needs to hear. You go in, give me an L-I-V-E and live. Because you know what? You don't have anything else to talk about inside the locker room. She knew exactly, and he looks
that's
at her.
That's the scene I'm talking about.
That's the scene he's talking about.
Yeah, but she.
Where he explains, where he blew up the.
But you said you
lab.
Didn't see any emotions, and well, I'm saying the guy sat there and bawled.
I thought you were talking about a different scene. That's the scene I'm talking
about.
Okay,
but you also said he didn't show any emotion in that scene.
No, were you not listening to me?
I'm trying to.
I said that scene where he sat there and they were both talking, smoking the water pipe, which is the scene you're talking about.
Right.
Was the only scene where I got some emotion out of both of these people, and they were both.
Holy smokes. Must have misunderstood you.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was like, I asked y'all who recorded, who made It's a Wonderful Life earlier, because it was Frank Capra made that movie, You Can't Take It With You. Well, that thing won Best Picture, and I finally watched about a year and a half, 2 years ago. I hated that movie because all the people in it were incredibly, they were just insane. And we were supposed to come across as going, these people, they just love life and they just love to be happy. Well, you know what? They love to be annoying too. I can't stand when they make a character who's supposed to be so in love with life, and the way they show that is they go around acting like an insane person.
Actually, yeah.
And doing stupid stuff. That's not what people who love life do.
You didn't pick that up as a...
Maybe she was insane.
No, she, and here's what I like too. You get the idea that maybe this girl's insane. Maybe she just has no reference point. She's crazy.
Maybe she's got dementia.
No, hold on. At the end, you find out, stop that. At the end, you find out she is so in her laurels that she's completely grounded in reality. She knows exactly what she is. She knows exactly what she wants to pass on to this kid. There's no crazy here. This is a woman who's completely grounded in reality. And the things she tells him is true about, you know, embracing life. Yeah. Do a somersault. Scream in the air, whatever it is you want to do, kind
it's
of
like the
song.
Cheesiest
says.
Stuff ever.
It doesn't matter. It is cheesy, but you know what? Here it's alive. Here it works. Here it's perfect for the story.
Yeah. I disagree.
Savage, what do you got?
Oh well, we deal with themes in this film. It's the themes of duality. It's the light and the dark, the life and death. It's the star-crossed lovers things. I mean, and yes, these are the stories that we as people tell each other, because these are the stories that are important to tell each other. And it is about light and dark, and it is about love and acceptance and life and death and impermanence and all of these pseudo hippie Buddhist things.
Right.
And watching this, you realize that Maud is a type of enlightened person.
Right, very much.
She embraces all of these things. And I do understand Max's point. It's like being alive does not give you license to act insane. It shouldn't do that. Mm-hmm. And she is a serial car thief.
Yeah, and I think that's for comic element, too.
No, and that goes back to Adam's point. There has to be some levity in this. Otherwise, it does get just too heavy-handed. These things of which I speak, she says the line. And when she's pointing out her collections of things, these are incidental. They're not integral. The comedy, the car chases, the car things, these are incidental. They're not integral. What is integral to this film is the themes of life and death.
Yeah.
And love,
mm-hmm.
and the impermanence of all of these things,
yeah.
and the beauty that is there, and the fear that some people have to accept these things.
Yeah.
And that's what Harold is. He's so fearful that he can't embrace anything.
Yeah. Fear is holding him back. It's pulling
absolutely.
The reins.
And
all she's doing
is the world loves its cages.
That's right.
The world loves its cages.
Because she used to go into the pet store and let loose the parakeets.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'd had her ass thrown in jail.
But again, that's incidental. It's not integral.
And that's why I say a lot of this film is incidental. Something happened to Maud to make her so desperate to grab life. My whole thing from the very beginning
was in a concentration camp.
How did these two people get to this point? And that bread trail, that breadcrumb trail that led them to each other was fantastic. And it revealed itself perfectly to me. Hoodie, go.
What I had to say doesn't lend itself to this point in the conversation at all.
So I like the sound of your voice. I like the sound of your voice.
I got nothing.
Okay, Max. What's
okay, well, I'll
no.
Okay, go ahead.
Shut up, Max. Okay. I wanted to mention something about like cutting the fat. If you have a scene in a movie and it's not mm-hmm. lending itself to the story, it's an incidental, then why have it in the movie? Unless you're just trying to make us laugh or you're not pushing the characters, you're not pushing the plot. So why even include that in the movie?
I don't know.
It's incidental.
I know.
And
I
this movie was
saying.
A lot. Yeah. It was full of that stuff to me. Like
it's only 91 minutes.
It was still full of it. I mean, I can think of, especially when he was trying to get out of the military, that was a very big incidental scene that I just could do completely without. Even though it was funny, didn't really push the plot.
You know, I kind of understand what you're saying. These are like little intermissions in all this heavy stuff. Let's go, okay, let's take a break and let's do some haha slapstick stuff.
Right.
I didn't see any heavy stuff either.
I didn't take it that way that it was incidental stuff. I think they thought, okay, we're going to use this silly scene to drive a point home in the film. And it's the same thing every time. They act crazy and do something crazy. And then she falls through that hole. Where'd she go? Again, this guy should have been on Broadway as a magician. He's incredible.
Yeah, he's good.
Yeah, he's real good. What's he doing trying to kill himself? He should have been up there with David Copperfield.
I don't know. You see, I didn't hang my hand on that at end of the film at all.
It's a problem, though. It's a big problem
with
the movie.
Well, it's a logistical problem, but he clearly
it's not
has
a logistical problem.
Magician moment. It's just that one.
It's about
and
relationships.
The burning thing.
It's about these two people on this on different ends of the same road, and how did that translate to me? Was it believable? Very, very believable to me.
And I disagree when you say he wasn't, Adam said he was looking for attention from from his mother. That's exactly what he was doing, because he told the story where she thought he was dead and she passed out. And he said, that's why I enjoyed being dead
after that.
But that's
incidental. The intention
that's not incidental. That's the exact reason he does it.
He doesn't do it just for attention. People throw temper tantrums for attention.
Then why does he do it?
Because he has some kind of deep-seated fear of death. He has some kind of deep-seated fear of his existence.
And
he has something very deep-seated that isn't correct in his psyche.
It can be all of these
things. It's not just about attention.
Okay, so it can be a deep-seated fear of death and his mom's not there to confide in. She's not around. So he's looking to her. He's going to Maude as a mother figure to kind of
fill that role.
Okay. Thank you.
When did he, whenever he tried to commit, quote-unquote, commit suicide, mm-hmm. when did he do it? In front of his mother.
Yeah. Well, obviously,
that's the
Adam,
only time. That's, well, he wants his attention from the
what
mother.
What I'm saying is that is just that is a symptom of something else.
I see what you're saying,
it's
and I agree with you.
It's a symptom of something else. And as far as him wanting Maude to be the mother figure, I don't even think, see, that's my thing. I don't see this as a romantic comedy.
No, it's not an Oedipus thing.
Romance is about seeing someone that you reflect your own life onto and then you build a life together. I don't think either one of these people looked at each other and saw that. What they saw was some kind of a reflection of what I feel with this fear. They were trying to quench each other's fear. It wasn't necessarily about building a relationship.
Both about death?
Yeah, I think so.
I can see that. I can get on board with that. But they did a really shabby job of portraying that.
When you look at this thing, a 17-year-old boy, 18, whatever, 79-year-old woman, it's an absurd premise.
It is.
Yeah, but
well,
I mean,
it's the star-crossed lovers thing.
It is. So for them to take this absurd premise and make me buy it impresses the hell out of me.
I didn't buy it.
It does impress
me. Yeah, well, I think Bud Cort sold it. I think his silent emotion in his emotive face, you could see in his face as he fell in love with Maude.
Yeah.
Maude was already in love with him. She was in love with him as a stranger. She's in love with the world. Now, being somebody's love made her feel even more special, but I believe that Bud Cort sold it, and I believe that that's why we even have the top three. I think this is why it's such an iconic role for Bud Cort. It's why he is associated with this role over and over because of his performance in this film.
Yeah, because in the end, I turned this movie off, I will never forget his face. His face drove this theme home to me.
Absolutely.
Her voice drove this thing home to me.
Yeah.
And it's almost like a song. It's like a song. Maybe I talk about the music in this thing.
Yeah.
I the first time I watched this film, I loved it. The second time, I'm like, God, someone just take Cat Stevens and ship him off somewhere.
Ship him to...
A little heavy-handed, but the music does work, especially the first time they roll it out.
What works is the terrible, terrible Cat Stevens duet with the piano. It's like, let's sing a song. And it's a terrible, terrible duet.
What do you guys think of the music in this film?
Yeah, it's okay. It's Cat Stevens.
It's Yousef. It's Yousef something or other.
No, because then it was Cat Stevens. And I liked it. I'm not a huge Cat Stevens, but he does.
But it worked here, didn't it?
Oh, yeah. And it still reminded you of The Graduate.
Did you like
it?
Well, and set of the time.
The way they were shot, what it's about, and even the music. But the movie looked really good. And I really liked, again, I liked the shots with the flowers to the headstones and all the little...
So you picked up on that.
Well, yeah. I mean, because it was thrust at me
over
and over for an hour and a half. And I was like, I get it. I get what you're telling me. Move past this and give me something.
But I thought that was very stark.
Heavy-handed.
It was heavy-handed, but it worked. I mean, you have these flowers and this beautiful speech. She wants to be the sunflower. He wants to be the flower. Nah, you say you're the same, but you're completely different. And it cuts away to the headstones that now... Before that scene, they're just headstones.
Yeah.
Now there's something completely different.
Okay,
there was a lot of construction.
There's still a lot of preaching that was going on. You can fit this stuff nicely into dialogue if you try hard enough. I really think that. This movie was really preachy, especially from Maude, just with like life, 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 life. I'm like, I get it.
What about the end? What do you think of the end scene?
I thought it was awful.
He didn't get out of the cock-a-doodle car.
I get the metaphor here. He killed the hearse, kills death, right?
Yeah, I got it.
But he didn't get out of...
He chooses life.
Yeah, he chooses life.
But he kills death.
Well, you know, she taught him how to play the instrument, too.
He destroyed a very beautiful car.
Yeah, that was his
big thing. Which is representative of death.
They actually destroyed that car, too.
Anyway.
Which really irks me.
And he strolls off up the hill, and before she says to him, you know, you have to learn to play an instrument, and he does at the end. I mean,
he doesn't. He's still plucking. That's not a song.
Whatever, man.
Okay, I'm going to bring up something on the music. Did y'all notice that whenever they played the Cat Stevens songs...
Do you have to sing it?
Yeah. You know, they started playing it once she's played the piano. And then once she introduces the banjo to him, the song changes from playing on piano all the time straight to a banjo.
I didn't notice that. Nice call. Didn't notice that.
No. Mm. But I just want to throw out my favorite. I mean, if there is a piece of comedy in here, and there is some, my favorite piece of comedy was when he tells his mom he's getting married, and then everybody tries to tell him why it's a bad idea. The general, the shrink.
Yeah.
And then the priest.
The priest. That was
the priest. Was good.
That was a good shot. With the pictures on the back of the wall to represent what that guy is.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That was good. That was a good shot. But again, that's nothing I haven't seen before.
On her firm. buttocks.
That was like the creepiest thing I've ever seen.
That was pretty creepy.
That again.
It was awesome.
He was so funny. The priest was awesome in this.
Yeah, so I guess we're going to end it there, guys. I'm going to wrap it up with my thing. This movie was brilliant. I have not stopped thinking about it from the first and second time I've seen it. I loved everything about this film, even the things that are kind of thrust at you heavy-handed. It's all for comic element, and it's still I put the other stuff down. I just looked at it as a comic element. For example, where'd she fall down the hole? It all works for me. This movie is light. It's dark. It asks questions. You say you've seen it all before. I've never seen anything like this. This is not a romantic comedy. This is not about romance. It's about life and death and the dance that you have to do with it. Everybody has to do with it.
They end up having sex.
Yeah, and it was a good scene, too. Yeah.
There was nothing.
No, there was nothing there.
And I'm going to end it with this.
But that's the way I'm going to end it. See this movie. This is a brilliant, brilliant film. Go,
it
Hoodie.
It tried to be light. It tried to be dark. It tried to be funny, and it missed. And that's that.
I agree.
Okay, I think this is one of my all-time favorite films. To be
I'm
quite
glad
honest.
On you.
Go
to a
ahead,
10.
Adam.
Go to a 10.
I might go to a 10. I might do that. Yeah.
I want to quote something about Mary.
What is it?
Harold and Maude is the greatest love story of our time.
We it's all not, know it's, that. It's not a love story.
Fantastic. It's perfect.
It is not a love story.
It is a love story.
No, it's not.
Okay, you guys. Then y'all totally missed the point.
It's a life story. It's a death story.
Somebody here on this side of the table just said that she was in love with life. Did that not just happen?
Yeah, but I'm talking about the romantic element of it. I don't think this is romance.
He wanted to marry her.
Do you think that has anything to do with romance? I've been married for 17 years.
Oh,
romance.
Said he was in love with her.
Oh, Snickersnacks.
Snickersnacks.
All right, let's get to the top three.
Yeah, let's go over to Savage. Let's end this thing here before we get into our top three. Savage, give us some final thoughts here on your idea of this film.
Well,
Harold and Maude, 1971.
This is a beautiful reflection on the things that are most important to all of us as people. It's the things that we all have to deal with one way or the other. We're going to either face together or alone. It's fear in the face of uncertainty. It's certainty in the face of fear.
I'd rather watch Schindler's List.
Or there's that.
That was a prequel to this.
Yeah.
I would say if I had to stick 20 movies in a time capsule, shoot it into outer space to show other civilizations and beings.
This would be one.
I
would put this movie in this capsule.
Yeah.
This is something you shoot into outer space to say this is what humans are capable of showing.
I think that's a good idea. You do that.
But I also have the jerk in there, too. What's that say?
Better choice.
Max, go ahead. Last word for you, man. Then we'll get into our top three.
Whatever. I wish I would not have watched it again because the memory of it was much better than actually watching it.
I'm gonna watch it again now, man. Come on, let's go. Let's go to my place and watch Harold and Maude.
I would rather watch. Harold and Kumar.
You know, we'll do Harold and Kumar. Now there's a love story for nowadays, right? Yeah. There's a modern retelling. How about we redo this movie for modern age with all of our
Harold and Maude go to White Castle.
Harold and Maude go to White Castle.
They're probably already working on it.
Hey, man, tell you what, we'll go home. We'll go to my place. We'll get really we'll pretend we're old. We'll watch Murder, She Wrote. We'll eat dinner at 4 o'clock.
I eat dinner at 4 o'clock.
Round it off with some MacGyver.
MacGyver. Yeah, something like MacGyver.
Matlock and Chuck Norris show, Texas
In the Heat of the Night.
Yeah, The Heat of the Night. That's a good one.
Well,
old people love that show.
A lot of people talk about this one. A lot of people talk about this film. We just did as well. And we got some mixed opinions on it. I liked it.
I didn't.
I liked it. I like Maude.
You sticking with a 9?
I didn't.
10, sir. 10.
I'm going to go with 10.
Perfect film.
Perfect film, 10. Go ahead. Give me 10. I've been teetering. I'm going to go with 10. I'm going to champion Maude. I loved
this.
Loved,
is our
loved
first 3 10s.
Then I'm going down to a 5.
No, shut up.
You suck.
You
sir.
Suck.
Yep. So it stays at a 40.
Okay. We're going to keep it at a 40. Hey, that's 40 out of 50. That's a high scoring
film.
That
is a high score.
That's high scoring.
I was very surprised, guys. Look, I didn't want to like this film as much as I did. I tried to fight it, but I loved it.
I'm surprised.
All right, let's get on to the top
50.
3.
And let's go to Shoney's and eat some food later. Never mind.
Yeah, early bird special.
Okay, so as always, this inspired a top 3 something or other, and that did as well here. Top 3 inescapable iconic roles, because look, man, no matter what Bud Cort does, he is that weepy-eyed Harold, right?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of actors like that. We could also call this the Mark Hamill
right.
Memorialist.
Oh, he might have been one of mine.
Yeah, right.
Oh, hey, all right, so let's get into this thing here. Yeah, why don't we start off with Adam? You tell us your number 3 inescapable iconic roles.
Zach Galligan.
I don't even know what the hell that is.
Billy from Gremlins.
Okay. You know what? I don't have a problem with this. Savage, you have a problem with
that? No, I ain't got no problem with
that. He's been in lots of movies, but he can't get past anything other than that.
Max, what do you say?
I can't think of anything else he's ever been in.
So it's a good choice.
Other
good
than
choice,
Waxworks.
Adam. Don't even know what the hell that is either.
He was in Waxworks. I forgot that was him.
Okay. All right, good choice there. I didn't think about that. That's excellent. All right, so we're going to go to Max Gumbo Johnson because we know that's what that's going to be. Go on, Gumbo.
Number 3, Bruce Campbell, Evil Dead.
Absolutely.
Nope. Bubba Hotep.
I wanted to say this, but Bubba Hotep is too...
No.
It's no. too iconic.
No, you no, walk up to somebody on the street and you say, Bruce Campbell, oh, the guy from Evil Dead.
Ash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's Evil Dead. He is Ash.
Burn Notice and all this other
thing. It doesn't matter if he was in something.
It doesn't matter if he was something else.
Yeah.
It's how tied tightly are you to one role. Hoodie. Exactly. Hoodie, bring me back down to earth. We're crashing down, man. What's your number three?
I'm going to go with Macaulay Culkin.
Yeah. Hard sub savage. Make it hard, make it sub, man. What is it? Number three.
I think certain characters lend themselves to this, and like Hoodie did with a child actor. I'm going with another child actor who's grown into a thing. Mm-hmm. Daniel Radcliffe. He's always going to be Harry Potter.
Always going to be Harry Potter, isn't he? Always yeah. He might surprise us.
I think he's still got time to grow out of Harry Potter.
Yeah. Mm.
You can do that.
I've seen it.
We'll have to see.
Watch The Woman in Black. Adam, that's a fantastic movie.
It's not the point.
He doesn't get the point, apparently.
Can we just stop the show and beat our head against the wall rather than...
All right, go ahead, Maestro. What's your number three?
I'm trying to figure out which way I want to kill myself here.
Number three.
All right, listen, number three, I'm not
with Adam.
I'm not going to go with a child actor. I'm going to go with someone who, this guy probably shakes his head every day going, why did I do this to myself? And that is the guy that played Shooter McGavin in Happy Gilmore.
He's such a character actor, though.
What? Come on. He's always going to be Shooter McGavin.
You're right.
Yeah, every time I see him now, yeah,
I hear what you say.
Shooter McGavin.
On this day?
If you saw him walking down the road, would you say, you're Shooter McGavin? And he'd go like this with his finger.
I would ask him what he eats for breakfast.
Yep, that's what I would ask him.
You eat little pieces of McGavin for breakfast? Oh, <that's... laughs>
Number two.
All right, you beautiful man. Go. Our producer, number two.
Ralph Macchio.
Excellent choice. So, number two, Max Gumbo Johnson. Blow my mind.
Linda Blair, The Exorcist. Yes, perfect. I know she went out with Rick James. I know she was in Night Shift. A Night Patrol. I'm sorry. Right. She was in some other films.
Right.
But that was her movie.
She's always going to be that.
Okay, she was also in The Heretic.
Hoodie.
Far supreme film.
Awesome.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Everybody loved that one.
Hoodie. Richard Burton.
What you got?
It's not a movie, but I have to go with Peter Dinklage for Game of Thrones.
That sucks.
What?
Yeah, what do you do?
That answer sucks, man.
Nope. It's good because that boy is typecast.
I don't think TV counts, man.
It's not TV.
It's HBO.
Thank you, Max.
So I can go see it at the movie theater?
Eventually, yeah. Okay. I think that'll get there.
I'll give you a pass. Look, you can't be a perfect 10 like Harold Maude. So I'm just going to let you just every once in a while slip. It's okay.
It's not a slip.
I don't like it.
It's true.
What's true is that it's Savage's time to tell us what his number
two is. I think these things are... More television actors are more susceptible to this kind of typecasting where they can't escape a certain role.
Yeah,
it's HBO.
But since we're doing films, I'm gonna bridge the gap. I'm gonna go television to film, but it's been film for 30, 40 years now.
Get there.
It's Leonard Nimoy.
Yeah, no doubt about
he's
that.
He's Star Trek he's, movies. He's
always
but he was in Invasion of the Body Snatchers with Donald Sutherland,
and he was Unsolved Mysteries. Or what was that movie from the show from the 80s?
He's Spock.
I don't know.
Remember, he was always on TV.
It was Spock.
Nope.
Oh, whatever. Boy, I screwed myself up on that.
You could pretty much name the whole cast the early Star Trek other than Kirk, and it'd fit right there.
No, he is perfectly in
he
that,
is. He's the number
in
one.
In that category. Yeah. He is Spock, man. And you know what my number two is?
That was the name of his book, I Am Spock.
You sure are, sir. Enjoy it for the rest of your days. Okay, my number two, what is the name of this list? Inescapable iconic roles. Yes. I'm going to go with Bela Lugosi.
Yes.
Good one.
Good choice.
Awesome. Is he ever anything other than Dracula?
No.
Ever.
Well, he's pulled
a
string.
Yeah, he was in some other movies.
He's pulled a string.
But he was buried in his Dracula outfit.
The black cat.
Oh, yeah. Completely erased Dracula from my mind.
Adam, the producer.
Plan 9, of course.
The producer, lead us off with a number one, and you tell us what it is, sir. What is it?
Christopher Reeves, Superman.
Absolutely.
I think good choice.
But shut up. The Death Trap.
No, that is a perfect number one. Is he ever going to be anything on the Super? You know what you say? Oh, that's Superman in another movie. Oh, that's Superman in another movie. That's the way it is.
That's how you should be judging this.
That's it. Yeah. That's the criteria.
Max, you are my Superman. You are my hero because you are going to deliver to me a number one. And what is it?
The greatest of all time. Completely almost ruined this guy's career. Anthony Perkins, Psycho.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Dang, I have to get another.
He was always Norman Bates.
I'm going to change
nothing else
one
he ever did. That was Norman Bates.
That was your number one.
That was my number one.
Rich.
And he completely nailed that role.
Yeah.
That's why it was ruined.
He completely nailed it
in the shower.
Right.
Yeah. I'm going with Mark Hamill.
That's
great
that's
one.
Thanks for, letting the cat out of the bag.
Sorry, man.
No, it's
what perfect was he in? He was the Sushi Girl, right?
I don't know.
Sushi Girl.
Haven't you seen Sushi Girl? What are you talking about?
Didn't he do the voice of the
Silent
Joker?
Bob, Strike Back.
Oh, I know. Corvette Summer. That, yeah.
He was in Star Wars 2.
Oh, that's right.
Part 2.
Part 2.
He was not in Part 2. He was in 4, 5, and 6.
Thank you, Adam.
Spare me that garbage.
Go, number one.
Yeah. What number one. I was, all right, I'll just go with it. Number one, old school Judy Garland.
Yeah. Man,
she's,
I didn't think
she's
about
always going to be Dorothy.
That's
she's
awesome. Dorothy. That's an awesome answer. Okay, excellent. Man, you know what my number
she's
one is?
She's always Dorothy. You're right.
Yeah.
I'm going to roll the dice. I'm going to go with another number one. That's like my backup number one. You know what it is? It's Paul Rubens, man. That's Pee Wee Herman forever.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Does that count? I mean, he's, that's
how
kind
does
of
that not count?
Ego.
That absolutely counts.
Okay.
Absolutely. Counts. Because when you look at him, you don't say Rubens, you say Pee Wee.
It's Pee Wee. Oh,
that's probably the best answer so far.
Pee Wee Herman is the ultimate inescapable. He can never get away from it.
You don't even call him Paul
you
Rubens.
You sold your soul you to the Playhouse.
And you see him and you just wonder what his living room is furnished in.
Adam, you like that answer? That's a good number one, isn't it?
That answer. I didn't like the Julie Garland answer, but I like that answer.
Because she was in like she was in Heat, and, like
clang 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 with the
Buffy
trolley.
The Vampire
Meet Me in St. Louis.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. That's way better.
You're the girl from Meet Me in St. Louis.
Hey, that's the girl from Meet Me in St. Louis with the red slippers in that other movie.
Yeah, it's not that.
Never mind. We all know.
We're not clear on this.
We all get it.
We all get it.
Are you sure we all get it?
We all get it.
Four
all
of right. us get it.
Max, what do you have for some honorable mentions? Joyce has some good honorable mentions.
Some honorable mentions. Jim Caviezel, Passion of the Christ.
Really?
He's always Jesus. No. Haley Joel Osment, Sixth Sense, Peter Billingsley, Christmas Story.
Well, AI was pretty good.
Robert Englund, Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah, absolutely.
Robert Andrew Englund. Robinson played Scorpio in Dirty Harry.
Stifler from American
he's
Pie.
Always Scorpio.
Who's the guy at the Animal House, the ROTC guy who did the
Fishman.
Oh, I can't think of his name right now.
You know
now.
What I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A pledge pin. Yeah, he even played it in the videos.
Exactly.
Yeah, I forgot about him.
What do you guys think about
that? What do you want to do with your life?
What do you want to do with your life? I want to rock.
I got John Heater from Napoleon Dynamite.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, he's screwed.
He just needs to step aside at this point.
He just needs to go on tour as Napoleon Dynamite.
Hey, Max. You're the authority on this film. I'm going to say Roy Scheider.
From Jaws?
Yeah, what do you think?
Ah.
He's always going to be the guy from
2001,
Jaws.
You can say that about all of those guys.
2010.
Yeah, I mean, he was in 52 Pickup and the 7-Ups.
Yeah,
no,
but
he
he's
good,
really...
Man.
Okay, all right.
I don't immediately... He was Blue Thunder. I don't immediately think Jaws
all right,
when I
all right.
Him.
You know, that's why I defaulted to you. And you set me straight. You educated me. And you made me feel about this small. Real quickly, I put this out on Twitter, as I always do. And check this out. Sirav Dutt at SD underscore... S-A-U-R-A-V says F. Murray Abraham.
I'm a dance.
He also said George Lazenby. You like that?
Yeah, the James Bond.
He said bags of charisma. Shame how it turned out for him.
Yeah.
P-Y-N-R-Y-N-J-A-H says, what about C. Reeves? Well, what about it? Adam said the same thing. We both agree. Good choice. First time watchers. He rolled off a list here. Check this out. Peter Weller. Peter Ostrom from Charlie and Chocolate Factory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Linda Blair, Linda Hamilton, Margaret Hamilton.
Yep.
Ooh, here's one. Mira Sorvino.
For what?
Maybe.
For what?
American Beauty? And,
well, she won the
Rami and Michelle's High School
Reunion.
Yeah,
but I remember from
Mighty Aphrodite. She
Mighty
won the,
Aphrodite,
she won the Academy Award.
I'm thinking of
Ralph Macchio and Haley Joel Osment. At Wilt's Movie Fan said David Duchovny. I don't know what he's talking about.
California.
X-Files,
okay.
Guess.
Christopher Reeve, Macaulay Culkin. And Rise of the Machine, End of the Career, Christina Loken.
Oh, yeah. Never.
She was
to be
in
seen
Terminator
again.
3. Dan at Movie Revolt, Christopher Reeve, Paul Hogan, Peter Ostrom.
Paul Hogan.
Kid from Willy Wonka. Justin at The Naked Nerd. I hope I never see that. The Naked Nerd. Mm. Another
he's thinking about it.
He says another Terminator byproduct, Edward Furlong, need I say more. Mm. And here's someone I hope I never see naked, and he probably is a nerd, and that's Bobby H. Sorry, Bobby. At kid underscore Minneapolis. He says Michael O'Keefe as Danny Noonan, right?
Yeah.
Caddyshack.
But Bruce, I wouldn't even recognize Michael O'Keefe.
Yeah.
I would think like Miles O'Keefe.
Bruce Campbell and John Heder. Kyle Hall at Marvelous Zombie 616. Bruce Campbell, obviously. And here's one that's kind of interesting. Jonathan Dorst won Cuba Gooding Jr.
And Harold Ramis.
Cuba Gooding Jr.
Yeah. Harold Ramis. I'd have to give that one to Harold Ramis.
Yeah. This
yeah, he's always Egon.
Well, he's the guy from As Good as it Gets.
Nope.
God rest his soul.
He's Egon.
God rest his soul. All right, man. So there it is. That's our top three inescapable iconic roles brought to you in inspiration by the 1971 Harold and Maude.
Yeah.
Which is what we talked about tonight, which leads us into our big reveal, and that is next week's film. And this is going to be a James. Am I correct on this? Heart Sub Savage?
Yeah,
is this you?
It's me.
Yep.
Me.
You gotta be kidding me.
Nope. It's me.
Man, it's already up to you.
Yeah.
All right. So, blow my mind. What is it? What is next week's film?
I have certain criteria that my
films. How many transvestites in this?
I don't know, Gumby Bears. How many do you want?
He got the plural.
He did.
How many do you want?
27.
All right. Well, no, there's not 27. For people who get the joke, I'm going to go Dead Man. Jim Jarmusch film, Dead Man.
We have not had any Johnny Depp discussion on this particular show.
Yeah, we need some new Johnny Depp followers. So
or Jim Jarmusch.
Or Jim Jarmusch. And since Down by Law,
I'd much rather talk about Jim Jarmusch. Yeah,
since Down by Law isn't on Netflix.
That's one that's been in everybody's queue. I bet you everybody on Netflix either has that in their queue or has had it in their queue at one point. It's been on there a long time.
Yeah.
Definitely one to talk about, and I'm ready, man.
Yeah, Dead Man.
Good pick. Okay, like so that is it. Next week is the Jim Jarmusch film. That's Dead Man next week. This week was Harold Maud, 1971. There you go. See you next week, guys. That's it. Ask the girl what she wanted to be. She said, baby, can't you see? I want to be famous, a star on the screen. But you can do something in between. Maybe you can drive my car. Yes, I'm going.